From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This, from Boston, where the Boston Symphony Orchestra is back on stage at Symphony Hall this week after 18 months without performances in front of live audiences. The new season that kicked off last night is also the first for the BSO's new president and CEO, Gail Samuel. WBUR arts reporter Andrea Shea joins us to tell us more. Hi, Andrea.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So this is exciting. What can audiences expect from their return to Symphony Hall?
Yeah, it is exciting, considering it's been months and months since the hall has been open to the public. But they're definitely going to encounter long lines on their way inside the hall. There were always lines before, but now they're just going to be longer because they will have to show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test. Once they're inside, they'll have to wear masks unless they're eating or drinking. But everything else, aside from the new ventilation system, is going to be the same as it was. Regular seating, full capacity, intermissions, etc. And when I spoke with the BSO's new president and CEO, Gail Samuel, this is what she said.
The good news for us is, first of all, we're in Massachusetts, so we are highly vaccinated. And our audiences tend to be highly vaccinated, we know, through the surveys that we've done. So that is very comforting.
The first few weeks of the BSO season will be telling, and Samuel acknowledges plenty of people are still too nervous to return to indoor events.
Well, I spoke with Samuel back when this was announced. She was still in L.A. Is she actually here now and settled in?
She arrived in the summer and spent a bunch of weeks out at Tanglewood, getting to know Tanglewood. As she put it, there's so many different moving parts to the Boston Symphony Orchestra, just like the L.A. Phil. And so she needs to kind of go through each area, whether it's the orchestra itself, Symphony Hall, Tanglewood, the Tanglewood Learning Institute, etc. So she spent her summer out there, and I actually did go to the opening night concert, which was quite something because that really was the first time the orchestra was able to play together for a live audience since the pandemic hit. It was very actually emotional, and she came out and kind of introduced herself to the audience. And so when we spoke this week, she has just kind of gotten back into the Boston area, and she's in her office, and she still hasn't even had time to unpack anything, so it just kind of felt a little personality less. And but she just laughed about it, and you know, it was a long trip for her and her family in the middle of a global pandemic to move. They drove across country from L.A., where she grew up.
And you're talking about emotional connections. Samuel has a personal connection to Tanglewood, right?
Yeah, she has this story. I've seen her tell the story before, but she has this story that the first time she actually went to Tanglewood in the Berkshires was when she was in college, and it really left a lifelong impression on her, and that was in 1986, and she and her parents, the parents got an RV, which was very exciting, Samuel said, and they were also Los Angeles Public School music teachers. So they drove the RV from LA to Lenox in Massachusetts. And this is what Samuel said.
We happened to arrive there and there was a concert going on that night, which was Leonard Bernstein conducting. And Midori was the soloist, who I think was 14 at the time.
And so Midori was this prodigy, violin prodigy, and she went on to make headlines after breaking one string while playing Bernstein's Serenade. She swapped it out with the concertmaster's violin, and then she broke another string and swapped it out. And she just kind of didn't miss a beat, which Samuel said was just absolutely amazing. And you can see, you can see it on YouTube. There's videos of it. So this is actually sound from that performance.
And she just kept going, and it does hold an important place in my personal history.
So Samuel was actually a violinist as well, and she says she went on to work at the Boston University Tanglewood Institute in administration for a few summers, and she actually said that inspired her to pursue her career in orchestral management.
Wow. I mean, that's such an amazing scene. You could see how that would really make an impression. And here she is, here now, decades later, charged with leading the BSO through this kind of incredible time. There's never been anything like this, right? You know, more than a year without ticket sales from live concerts.
Right, exactly. And when I asked her about that, this is what she said.
The organization lost $50 million of revenue over the course of the pandemic, and that's a lot of work to come back from that.
So steering the orchestra through these pandemic-related challenges is, of course, top of list for Samuel. But she also really wants to build on the BSO's responsibility to be relevant and accessible. And so these are the things she's really thinking about. Preparing for the orchestra's return to Symphony Hall, though, has really been occupying her a great deal. So I think now that the first concert is under their belt, and then there's actually a free concert on Sunday for the public to invite them back to Symphony Hall. But then I think Samuel will start really plotting ahead about how to do the things that she's thinking are incredibly important for an orchestral organization in 2021.
And something that we really have to note, because classical music sadly does not have a great record on inclusion, that Samuel is the first woman to lead the BSO in its entire 140-year history.
Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, there's definitely a sea change going on. I'm just noticing across different genres of art and arts leadership. So this is a big deal. And she totally acknowledged it sitting in her office. It was interesting, which I had never noticed. I mean, I've interviewed her predecessor, Mark Volpe, many times in his office, and I never noticed that these shelves are lined with these bound black books that are actually all of the programs that go back to the founding of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. When we were talking, Samuel pointed to the programs dating back to the BSO's founding.
And there are names of some of the men who were the CEO or the executive director at the time. It stands out.
And Samuel did say she'd like to see more women at the podium as well. And, you know, but while creating role models for young women in classical music on stage and leadership is important to her, she also added that she really looks forward to when gender isn't part of the conversation.
It'll be great when it is no longer part of the conversation. Andrea, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Arun. Have a great weekend.
That's WBUR's Andrea Shea. Before we go, I should tell you what else is going on. Suffolk County District Attorney Rachel Rollins' nomination to become the next U.S. Attorney for Massachusetts has been complicated by yesterday's unprecedented deadlock vote by the Senate Judiciary Committee. A majority in the full Senate is now needed to bring Rollins' nomination forward for approval. Speaking at a Boston Chamber of Commerce event, Rollins pointed out that the tied committee vote does not mean an end to her nomination.
I knew this was not going to be easy, and that the work we're doing here in Boston is scary to some people who are deeply invested in the status quo because the system works incredibly well for them.
Rollins says she's humbled by the support she has received and is looking forward to the vote by the entire Senate. In other news, state lawmakers are calling Smith & Wesson's downsizing of its Springfield factory a corporate ploy after the company announced Thursday it will relocate some operations to Tennessee and lay off 550 local workers. The weapons maker blamed the move on a bill being considered by the legislature that would have greatly restricted handgun and assault rifle manufacturing in Massachusetts. Senator Eric Lesser from Longmeadow said that the bill, which is nowhere close to becoming a law, is being used as political cover by Smith & Wesson while they lay off workers.
To me, it feels much more like a run-of-the-mill corporate consolidation that they're trying to take political shots with than something actually tied to that bill.
The company is also closing plants in Missouri, a state with far fewer gun control laws than Massachusetts. Meanwhile, as if healthcare workers haven't had enough to deal with during the pandemic, patient assaults on them are on the rise. And one of Boston's most prominent hospitals has some surprising numbers. Officials at Massachusetts General Hospital say that on any given day, 2 to 3 nurses face verbal or physical assaults by patients. Mass General's head of security, Bonnie Michaelman, says it's a problem hospitals across the country are grappling with.
People got very sick, people got very scared, people got very economically challenged. More importantly, people who needed psychiatric resources can't and couldn't easily get them.
Assaults can also come from patients with dementia or Alzheimer's, or those who become aggressive after anesthesia. Many involve emergency room patients who are intoxicated. Mass General says it's training employees to detect agitated patients and will soon pilot panic buttons for nurses. And finally, the Topps Field Fair will return this fall after being canceled last year because of COVID-19. It was just the third time organizers called off the fair since it began in 1818. Fair spokesperson David Thompson says turnout is expected to soar if the October weather cooperates.
People keep talking about the roaring 20s, after the war, and people coming back out in droves to do things. So there's that anticipation that it might be, a huge attendance year.
Thompson says there will be extra hand washing and sanitizing stations around the fairgrounds. Discounted fair tickets are on sale now. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since Boston and a symphony orchestra, I'm Arun Roth. Have a great weekend. Between Zoom meetings and Zoom classrooms, have you and the kids had enough of screen time? Turn off the screen and tune in to the brand new Pinkalicious and Peterific podcast. Join Pinkalicious and her little brother Peter as they sing along to their favorite songs from the hit PBS kids show, Pinkalicious and Peterific. Subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or your favorite player.